everyone, welcome to China Money Podcast, a weekly in-depth interview show on private equity, venture capital and hedge fund investments in China. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Today we'll have a quick news review. We'll first look at China's economy. The latest March MPI number came out. Where is the economy headed? Next is Hong Kong's property market in a bubble, and will the bubble burst soon? Then China's largest listed state banks finish reporting on their fourth quarter performance. Is their strong earnings run close to an end? And lastly, Standard Poor's issued a report on China's shadow banking system. Will it threaten to turn China's financial system and economy upside down? But before we go to the specific topics, a reminder about the ways you can get our program. One is to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or go to our website at chinamoneypodcast.com and sign up to our newsletters. You can also like our Facebook page or follow us on Twitter at chinamoneypod. And of course, I say this every time, our program is free to the users. This is made possible by support from our listeners, our dear advertisers and sponsors. If you'd like to support us, just simply go to chinamoneypodcast.com and click on one of our sponsors' ads and remember still to sign up for their great services. Thank you, everyone, for your continued support. So, the Chinese economy. Just this past Monday, official Purchasing Manager Index came out. It rebounded significantly in March, and that's consistent with the rebound shown in the HSBC PMI numbers released earlier, further supporting the view that the Chinese economic recovery is gaining momentum. But the consensus has been formed that the economy will have a tiger head snake tail this year, or in Chinese, Hu Tou Shi Wei, meaning a strong first half and more headwind during the second half. In particular, watch out for more tightening measures from the government on the property sector, or even more tightening measures from the central bank during the second half of this year. Next, Hong Kong's property market. Is it a bubble? ANZ issued a report sounding alarm of a residential property bubble burst in Hong Kong. It says during the past 12 months, Hong Kong's economy expanded 1.4%, but residential real estate prices have increased 23%. Price levels have now surpassed the previous peak set in 1997. Using a model constructed by ANZ, the bank estimates that Hong Kong's actual residential property prices in the last quarter of 2012 are 24% higher than its fair value. Historically, a widening gap between actual price and fair value has preceded a significant price correction, such as in the fourth quarter in 1997, second quarter in 1998, and the fourth quarter in 2008. Each quarter registered price declines of more than 16%. So if you're thinking about buying properties in Hong Kong, ANZ's advice is to think twice. Next, the biggest Chinese public listed banks have finished reporting their fourth quarter 2012 performance. AllianceBernstein released a report on the results of the seven banks it covers that includes Agriculture Bank, Industrial and Commercial Bank of China, Bank of Communication, China Merchants Bank, Bank of China, China Construction Bank, and CITIC Bank. Overall results beat market expectations by 1%, among which Bank of China is a standout winner with the biggest earnings beat. The reasons behind the market-beating performance, one is net interest margins were up 2 basis points quarter over quarter compared with market expectations for 5 to 10 basis point decline. But this won't continue as AllianceBernstein forecasts that net interest margins will compress 5 to 10 basis points for the banks in the first quarter of 2013. Secondly, fee income surprised on the upside also. year-over-year growth of 25% in fee income was recorded for the group, up sharply compared to previous quarters in 2012. In particular, cards and custody businesses had the strongest growth. And lastly, Standard & Poor's released a report on China's shadow banking sector last week. Shadow banking and the risks relating to it have been in the news for a long time. In this report, S&P gives its own diagnosis of the problem. You've probably heard lots of cases of risky shadow banking products, such as CITIC Trust Company, the largest trust company in China, announced in January that one of its trust loans could default because the underlying borrower didn't make the due payments. And remember last December, the dispute between investors and Huaxia Bank on losses investors suffered from wealth management products sold by Huaxia Bank? So there have been continuous cases of problems and scandals relating to shadow banking in China. But first, how do you define shadow banking? S&P uses the definition given by the Finance Stability Board, that is, credit intermediation involving entities and activities outside the regular banking system. But this definition is also open to interpretation. For example, should off-the-balance sheet letters of credit issued by a regulated bank be included in shadow banking or not? On one hand, it's issued by a bank, but it's off-balance sheet. S&P decides that only those credit intermediation activities should be considered as shadow banking if the credits add to the leverage in the real economy or the financial system, and if those are not properly accounted for as regular banking credits. So therefore, S&P excludes all traditional off-balance sheet credits, such as letters of credit, bankers' acceptance, bank guarantees, and committed credit lines, because those are contingent credits that don't push up leverage in the real economy until they are drawn down. Another measure which is released by China's central bank, which is called aggregate social financing, is also not a good measure, S&P argues, because it includes loan debt and equity and excludes certain loans that S&P thinks should be included. So S&P basically calculated its own numbers on the size of China's shadow banking sector. By this definition, S&P estimates that China's shadow banking accounts for 23 trillion RMB, or 3.7 trillion US dollars, of credit in China at the end of 2012. That's equivalent to 34% of the total loans in the banking sector and represents 44% of China's GDP in 2012. This 44% ratio between the shadow banking size and also the GDP compares with 111% for G20 countries and the Eurozone at the end of 2011. By this comparison, we could almost argue that China's shadow banking is not big enough. But the shadow banking sector has been growing at a very fast pace. It has been increasing at a compounded annual growth rate of 34% since the end of 2010. There are three key drivers behind this growth. One, massive investment in infrastructure and property development. Number two, consolidation in China's export sector. And lastly, restrictive measures in the regulated banking sector, in particular a policy reversal in 2010 when the central bank tightened availability of banking credit for infrastructure and property development projects that pushed capital demand to the dark side. So how bad is the situation? If you wanted to hear an end-of-the-world scenario, sorry, you will be disappointed. The purpose of this S&P report seems to be mainly to educate investors about how shadow banking is not as terrible as those horrifying stories you have been reading on the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. First of all, many media reports seem to assume that the underlying credit of the whole shadow banking sector is bad. Of course, S&P believes that's not the case at all. They think more than half of the shadow banking credit in China could actually have better risk profiles than bank loans. It may sound ridiculous at first, but not so when you think about the portion of the bank loans that go to ill-managed state-owned enterprises, especially local SOEs. Take banks' wealth management products as an example. S&P thinks that these type of products are just bank deposits in disguise. Wealth management products was equivalent to 7.6% of the banking system's total deposits in 2012, yielding on average 4.11% compared to 3% deposit rate. S&P estimates that 65 to 70% of the underlying assets of these wealth management products are in corporate loans and bonds. And this type of corporate debt usually have a short maturity of less than 6 months and possibly minimum default risk. I am, for one, a regular wealth management product buyer. I usually buy from Bank of China's wealth management products. It usually had products ranging from 2 months to 3 months, yielding over 4%. You get a little bit better return for pretty safe investments, even though you do sign a contract that says the return is not guaranteed and your principal might be potentially compromised. But everybody who's buying this type of products knows for a big bank like Bank of China, they will not take the reputational risk of not returning principals back to their investors. And the composition of this type of products are usually quite safe. Like S&P says, there are a lot of corporate loans. Also, they buy government debt as well as some policy bank debt. But of course, there are areas of concern such as trust credit to property developers, local government financing vehicles, and curb market loans to distressed property developers or exports-related small to medium-sized enterprise, particularly in those higher-risk regions and provinces. But still, in conclusion, S&P doesn't think that shadow banking in China has reached a point to destabilize China's financial system, contrary to what you may have read elsewhere. Because number one, the size of shadow banking is relatively modest compared to the regular banking sector. Secondly, the risk profiles of shadow banking products are not all rotten apples. Most are good ones and only a small portion may become bad. And lastly, the official banking sector is in a relatively healthy state when you consider capitalization, earnings, and funding profiles. But because of the difficulty in obtaining statistics, S&P did not offer specific forecasts of the size of potential losses, default rate, etc. But the message is clear and simple. Risks relating to shadow banking in China are still very much manageable. All right, great. That's today's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and find it informative. Again, if you'd like to support us, go to our website, chinamoneypodcast.com, and click on any of our sponsors' ads and sign up for their great services. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned and see you next week.